name is Philippa Ryan. I'm a Gibson. I belong to the Downtown Eastside Elders Council, and we were invited to this conference defending the land, and it just sounded like it was grassroots. So,
My name is Rita Blind. I'm from originally from Saskatchewan and living in Vancouver for the last 35 years. I work at the Downtown Eastside Women's Center for quite a while now. And how I found out about this program was through one of the people. So when I heard about it, I was very much excited. You know, I thought, well, I wanted to be here. You know, I always knew I was part of that. The land, you know, I grew up in. I was born, you know, not in a hospital, but out there in the wilderness. My mother delivered me herself, so I am part of that defender of the land.
My name is Carol Martin. I work at the Downtown Eastside Women's Center also. I'm Niska and Gitniel. And I actually just found out about this. I think a few days before we were supposed to leave. And it sounded really exciting.
Okay.
It's something like, wow, someone's going to finally do something.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the main issues and struggles that your community is facing? I know that's a big issue, but maybe between the three of you, you can break down for us a little bit some of the issues that you've shared with people here and that you brought to the gathering.
Well, we work in the area where the highest population of Aboriginal people are, or Indigenous people, end up. I ended up down there. It's like the end of the barrel, like the end of the road. Where how much further can you go when you're dealing with a lot of dysfunction and a lot of stuff that are happening either on the reserves or with your home? But then I started working down there and just started noticing a lot of violence, a lot of violence against women. A lot of our people are lost, homeless, dealing with health issues, no contact with family, totally isolated or ostracized. Noticed a lot of money going into the Downtown Eastside, but nothing's changing for our people. And they're total cast-offs, but they've become a commodity for society. You know, a lot of our Native kids are being pulled into the, it's almost like the reruns of residential school, and a lot of our kids are being apprehended because of poverty or because of addiction or any other things that the system wants to label our people with, and they really target our Native women. And so when we go to courts, we see a lot of young families and a lot of youth. And if it's not our women diamond going missing, it's a lot of our men ending up in jails, or our youth ending up in jails, or kids in group homes. So our people have become like a commodity for society. And the Olympics has a big, huge impact on the Downtown Eastside right now. And even us as workers, we feel the impact because of trying to find a really reasonable place, you know, something that's not going to fall apart. I mean, paying $2,000 for a four-bedroom where the roof starts leaking and the pipes start breaking and the landlord doesn't want to do nothing. The conditions that our people are having to choose, you know, housing, it's just unreal, you know. And right now I'm paying like almost $1,800 for a three-bedroom, and we just turned one room into another bedroom because it's very hard for people to find housing, and no one's listening to people downtown. No one's listening to the voices of these people from, you know, this area here. And so we also work with a lot of survivors, people who are displaced and have no connection to family, or they're, no one tells them anything down there. They're not even aware of a lot of what's going on with residential school settlements and that. And So we do one-to-one counseling. We do some little group thing, the healing circle. Rita can talk more about that. You know, we try to bring a lot of the spiritual and cultural part of, you know, what is missing down there.
Rita, you've lived in the community for 30 years or so?
Well, I've been in Vancouver for 35 years.
Yeah.
I wasn't down there I was down there for the last 15 years. First, I started volunteering as more or less hanging around Carnegie, watching what was happening. How I came to, how I woke up was, I was working at the Third Beach, one of the top restaurants in Vancouver. And I came on the bus and I seen the people there, you know, because in the residential school they tell you to stay away from, stay away from the Indians because they're gonna kill you. They're gonna do, you know. They were giving us all this kind of scare tactics, you know, against our own people when I was in that school for 9 years. And then I was riding the bus one morning and I happened, you know, I just kind of looked and I thought, oh my God, these are my people. And I just realized I seen myself. And then I stopped working over at that place and I just started hanging around that downtown east side and just being around, you know, I just started realizing, my God, what is happening? And there was a life skills happening there, so I got myself in there and I started being around there. And the first thing you know, I applied for a job and I got in, and it was such an eye-opener for my own personal self that I cried when I was watching all this, you know. And you know, in the last while that I've been there, if there was a way that I could change the whole thing, I'd close all those places down there because they're not helping anybody except themselves. And a lot of it is these, the white, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, in any way, but the white people has a hold of that whole area from all directions, you know, and they run all these places, even the downtown east side itself. A lot of times we have really no say in what goes on in those places. There is, like, Women's Center itself has 1 point some million dollars coming right into that place, but where does it go? And I questioned it at one point, you know, with my boss. And within 2 weeks, she was gone. She couldn't answer me. She just left. So, well, as Carol was saying, you know, I think the awareness needs to be brought to the downtown east side in that whole, within very short blocks, you know, there's millions of dollars going into that place, but nothing is done. Mm-hmm. So many places our people live in bed bugs and cockroaches and mice, and you know, and they talk about it like it's so what, you know. Even within where I work, it's like the mice are running around. They think, well, there's nothing wrong, my boss said to me the other day. And I said, you know, Alice, it's not that, it's just that I think it's not right for this to be happening in our workplace, you know. And I'm going in a different direction here, but it's just that awareness needs to be brought to the, you know, to the open, you know, where the people need to know all these things that are happening. And our people are suffering, the ones that work there, the native people, you know. They seem to have no voice, and when they try and voice their own opinions, they're silenced very fast, you know. And I think because of this Defenders of the Land, I feel like I got more power. I got more. I need to say a lot more out there now when I get back. You know, I'm not going to be afraid to sit and watch all this happening.
Philippa, you're part of the Elders Council and Grassroots Women. Maybe if you can add to what Carol and Rita have just said about the issues and struggles that people are facing, especially women are facing in the Downtown East Side community, especially Aboriginal women.
Yeah. Well, I live right down Main and Hastings, and I volunteer at a place called the Dugout. I've been there for more than 10 years, and it's worked for me because it structures my days and keeps me in contact with the community. And for me, I was lucky. I found the Grassroots Women, and they are wonderful activists, you know, and we're connected to the Philippine community, and they have people all over the world, maybe over 180 countries where their people go to be cheap labor, and they've shared their experiences with us, and so I've been lucky working with them, because they share a lot of issues with First Nations here, because they also have indigenous people in the Philippines. They also have a prostitution problem connected originally with the American bases there, it's later extended to the rest of the world. And so it's been really good working with them, because right now we've been in alliance with other groups that are working on fighting the government's attempt to legalize prostitution. And it's really disheartening that the government's doing that, because for me, prostitution has always been the bottom line. And now if they make it legal, and you could, and it's a tax-paying job, there's going to be no more welfare. They're just going to put us out down the streets, you know, and our young people are also being recruited by the military. So the only options they would have are prostitution or the military. And things haven't gotten better for our people at all. So for me, I've always wanted to link up with the international community. And so here we have a chance to do that, and really start settling how the world has looked at indigenous people, but share it with the international indigenous people.
We basically went from East Coast to West Coast and hearing about different experiences, and you've just shared, the three of you, the issues that you're facing in your community, a wide variety of them. But I'm wondering if you could reflect and share how you feel about when you hear about other people's struggles at this gathering, other things that people shared. How did you feel? What did you think when you heard that? And how did that relate to your own day-to-day organizing? So it's sort of a broad question, but I hope that gives you something to share with us. I'll start with you, Philippa.
Well, for me, there were a lot of things that I knew about, because I'm Gitxen, and we had a court case with the Dalgamuch case, which we won in 1997. And when Steve Lawson talked about winning a court case and they weren't able to use it or do anything with it, that happened to the Dalgamuch case, where we won title to our land. And it's just an empty victory. you know. And we spent years going through the court for that case, and just how casually it was brushed aside. And it's the juggernaut, their agenda, and it's only their agenda that's being allowed. And so we want the rest of the world to know that. And there's a lot of outrageous things that have been done, like, you know, when they started fining them these outrageous amounts, knowing we have no jobs and nothing. It's the same thing they're doing with the street children, you know, the squeegee people. They have fined them, and they know very well they have no jobs, you know. That's why they're doing what they're doing. And it just flabbergasts me. How do they expect society to be honest, honorable, you know, just the way they treat us, you know? It's so casual the way they dehumanize us and perpetuate stories that aren't even true. And yeah, it's sometimes I get really, really angry when I start hearing, and especially when I heard it through other people's stories. But it just makes me more determined that they're not going to get away with it.
Move to Rita. So Rita, you know, you sat in the circle and heard from people. Do you have any reflections to share with us about that?
I think one of the things for me was start waking up again, you know, to a lot of the things that has been happening all over our land here, you know, all the way from the Mohawk to all the way back to British Columbia. Some of the things that people were talking about, like Milton, I thought his story, I remember that time in the 70s when these things were happening, and I was in the city and I was like, whoa, I want to be there, but there was no way I could get there because I was on the system, on the welfare system at the time. And you know, you want to be at these places, but you can't, and it always has to do with money, you know. So I understand what our people are going through, and you know, not, I wish I could say all of it, but I look forward to what is going to happen today, and I hope we can, I know we are going to go away with a beautiful open heart, you know, and I'm so happy to be here. Yeah.
Okay. Carol, when you heard other people's stories and other people's struggles, how did that reflect on you when you thought about that and what you're working on and seeing every day in the Downtown East Side?
Well, you know, I did a lot of soul searching on residential school and its impact on our people and all the big whys. And then when the government got up and apologized, it just validated a lot of what had happened to me. A lot of things that had happened to my mother, she did to me and my sister. And so there's a lot of self-hatred and a lot of shame and a lot of dysfunction, a lot of things that I carried, and had to try fit into a world where when you get ripped from your skin and you can't fit into it because you don't feel comfortable. And then the government gets up there and apologizes about implementing policies of genocide, and I see it and I hear it, and then it reinforces that. Whole idea of, you know, these policies when I hear what is happening on the reserves. And it's so different compared to when I was a little girl in the 60s living there. And he has not done anything to change these policies. And we got to let the world know that these policies have been implemented worldwide with our indigenous people across the borders. And it's a system set up to kill off a lot of what's inside of us, that because it's what what who we are and what our culture and our spirituality are represents who we are, our language. I'm one of those lost people who I've lost a lot. I've lost my family, I've lost my connection to a lot of what represented who I am. And they continue to do that, and I see it reflected not just downtown, but hearing the stories, you know, on the reserves and how, you know, the government has so much control. And you know, if the government doesn't control you, there's so many ways that he controls our people. You know, if he can't control you, then send in the friggin' Bibles, you know, and control you in that way. And the, or another way is to elect chiefs and totally disregard our hereditary chiefs. So we've been, they do a lot of things to brainwash us, to think and see and feel it a certain way. And they use scare tactics. You know, we are all watching TV, we all read the newspaper. You know, like the recent ones are, this guy got tasered and died. Well, there's so many happening. Or this mother, that was just a, like, nobody was outraged about it. They tasered a mom to get a baby away from her. Now, they use so many scare tactics, and the government's very strategic in how he works with the people. You work with a huge crowd, you throw a little bit of this and that, and I was watching the news last night, and they're talking about how bad things are gonna get, and you know, and it's like, what the hell are you talking about? You know, we've given the government too much power. You know, you have people fundraising for breast cancer for years, but no one wants to hold them accountable for all that. Where did that money go? Why is HIV on the rise? Why is homelessness on the rise? Why are health issues so rampant? Why are these people living in, you know, homes, whether it's on a reserve or off the reserve, in horrible conditions? Because we do not question the government. We take everything at face value without questioning. Even if it's something you get, you ask for it, you didn't question it. Now, the government has too many meanings for one word. And he clearly took advantage of my people when it came to the treaties. We had no rights negotiating away our land. We are the keepers of this land. But destroy a nation and then take advantage of them? Like, how can we say that there was fairness in that? Now he's doing it again, where he's opened up a whole can of worms with our people. Our people are very vulnerable at this time. And, you know, push our people into poverty and then offer them a bit of money for, excuse me, sexually abusing them, taking away their culture, you know, hiding behind closed hotel doors, you know, trying to make, say, oh, I'm giving you this money, you know. But they pushed our people in deep poverty, that money looks good. To feed our people, to give them clothes, to give them what they need. They've taken away a lot of our rights, but they've taken away a lot of our freedom. And it will continue to this day until we break from that culture. They take away your culture, even people entering into Canada, and then you develop another culture within this so-called Canada. I call it KKK Canada because it's just, you know, it's not representing the First Nations people. We are not considered part of Canada, and they've made us feel that way. And he said, the native people have to heal? Excuse me, but the white system, the whole system has to heal because of the years of building stereotyping and stigmatization and all the, you know, all those big words. The English is still very, very, how do I say it? I feel like I'm just woken up, and the English word is still kind of foreign on my tongue, and because it was years of disassociation, because I was sexually abused, beaten, abandoned, like everything, and then all of a sudden I did this work with this therapist, and all of a sudden I'm back in trying to tap back into my body. But then it's also getting comfortable in this body, looking in that mirror and feeling not the same, you know, and feeling, putting words to feelings that I didn't know existed. So I'm waking up.
There's one more question about the Walk for Justice.
I can just touch a bit on it. You know, I've been working in the downtown east side for so many years. And the government, I don't know if you know the history from before, where if a Native woman married a non-Native, she lost her status. And if a Native man married a white person, she got status. So you're still dealing with a lot of that. And the government really targeted Native women in particular, because we hold the families together. We're very good at strategies. And the government because there's a saying that behind every successful man stands a woman, that came from Native people. Because we stood behind the great chiefs, we stood behind the warriors, we call. And we got stuck with a lot of names. You know, they took clear advantage of who we are as Indigenous women. You know, we are very nurturing, very caring, and somehow they kind of whitewashed that and made it look ugly, made it look demeaning, dehumanizing. You know, they took advantage of that. You know, I could come to you and be nice to you and all this, and they kind of switched it around and made it like I was being, how would you say, I'm not good with those other words, being promiscuous, you know. And and then as the years went by, all these labels start being attached to us, you know. And dealing with all the sexual abuse, all the dysfunctions, all the violence in our lives. Of course, how else are we going to deal with it? A lot of people use drugs and alcohol to numb a lot of their feelings, you know, and there's that disconnection and ostracization from your family or from your reserve if you speak up and say anything about what had happened. So there's a big history, and there's also this big, thick, almost like a big dictionary against us, you know, with all these labels about who we are. And, you know, with the media and all the coverage about Native women being drunk and lazy, and, you know, and we're very kind-hearted. We still are to this day, even though a lot has been taken from us. But a lot of it has been our perception and theirs don't match halfway. Like, you know, they totally just twisted a lot about who we are as indigenous women. And made us look like we were the lazy ones, the easy ones, you know. And so when women started going missing, and poverty also pushed a lot of our women to the streets, you know, also being ostracized from your reserves, from your family, we are the ones who are not in denial. Like, we've moved away from the reserves, we moved away from the dysfunction. I know I did. I'm speaking for myself too. And I didn't want my kids to be a part of that. And but as the years went by, and, you know, working and living in the downtown east side, I started noticing a lot of Native women going missing, but there was not a lot of coverage. There's not a lot of coverage for anything that happens to our people. And it's very, very limited. And, you know, they make it look, you know, if compared to a Native person and a non-Native person, they'll say a person who was intoxicated compared to a drunken Indian. You know, the labels they use, you know. And so as the years went by, people did not accept us for who we are. They accepted us for what society presented to them. And so as more Native women went missing or died, you know, they didn't take it serious, compared to a non-Native person who, if they died or went missing, there'd be a lot of coverage on it. And so the government clearly reflects, you know, how he feels about Indigenous people, you know, especially when it came to the Native women. And if you remember in the news some time ago, they had this huge trial on the Picton farm, and talking about all these horrible things that happened to these women. And then you have this Native guy who was in jail for over 10 years. He was a balcony rapist or something. All these women went out there and they raged about it. This guy here spent 10 years already for something he did. Why weren't they at the Picton trial there raging about him for what he did to the Native women? You know, he sodomized them, he cut them up, he did everything horrible to these women. So where's the justice? Are we even a part of that system? You know, and it's very hard too, because right now we do this Feb 14 Memorial March every year. And it just brings attention about, you know, the lives of these women who had to go to the corners to bring money home to feed their kids, you know, because rent is so high, or, you know, they get, they don't have enough for food or clothes, or, you know, the reserves totally disconnect, they're disconnected from their families. So where's the help, you know? So now they're trying to legalize prostitution, so where's that gonna take us? And you talk about trafficking. You know, these people, there's a lot of really sick people out there. Look at what the churches did to our people. You know, the priests and the nuns. You know, how is it Canada's hiding these people, these pedophiles, these murderers who, you know, a lot of these kids didn't return home. You know, so until we start, and I'm really happy about this conference, because now we're all coming together. And now we're seeing the common relationships in our problems, you know, and no voice to any of our problems. You know, there's just a deaf ear. And when they hire those, they put in place those chief and councils, they have deaf ears to their very own people on the reserves. They should be ashamed of themselves.